Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering a research-based master's degree in biological sciences, covering diverse topics from ecology to molecular biology. With a 90% placement rate, become a leader in a science field that is shaping the future. Details at uwp.edu. And the morning show starts in about 30 seconds.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be spending most of our time today talking about an opportunity that you have this next week on December 22nd, 23rd, 24th to experience one of the great classics in all of Christmas literature, A Christmas Carol. And this is going to be a virtual performance delivered by the Fleeing Artists Theater Company. And so we have Alex Metalski with us, of course, who is serving as production manager for this production. Also with us, J.R. Trimark, who is the director. And we're joined by Scrooge, namely local actor Jay Rattle. And we're also happy to have with us Clara Tappa, who is going to be talking about a very special aspect of this production, the fact that it is being done in fond memory of the late Phil Yeager, a gifted and busy actor who has been long associated with this show. And so his presence and legacy looms large over this production. We'll be talking about that as well. So Alex Metalski, J.R. Trimark, Jay Rattle, Clara Tappa, we welcome all four of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Ahead of us talking about Christmas Carol specifically, Alex, just give our listeners some sense of all that Fleeing Artists Theater has been doing over the last few months to stay active and vital during the restrictions of COVID-19.
Sure. Well, starting back in late spring, once the pandemic broke out, we have switched to an all virtual format. Everybody has become accustomed to Zoom and other variations of speaking through their screens. We have essentially done readings and pseudo performances over Zoom, free to the public at large.
So tell us what prompted the choice of A Christmas Carol and some of the sort of special ambience that surrounds this production.
Sure. Well, in this instance, it was a meeting of a lot of different reasons that just seemed to come together naturally. Usually we do A Christmas Carol. It's becoming a bit of our tradition for our new theater company. This is our third year, and this was going to be the third season of doing A Christmas Carol, albeit over Zoom. However, tragedy struck our community last month with the passing of a wonderful, wonderfully generous and talented man who you mentioned at the top, Phil Yeager. He had played Scrooge with our company the last 2 years, even though every position of the last two shows had been completely different directors, different actors. The one constant presence in both productions was Phil. And it was such a shock losing him. It almost felt like maybe doing Christmas Carol might not have been the best idea. But we also thought it was one of his favorite productions. It was one of his favorite roles. And if we could essentially bring together everybody who knew Phil, had worked with Phil for the past 30 years, perhaps it would be a fitting tribute to the man who meant so much to us. Mm.
So towards that end, the last I heard from you, there was a total of 35 different actors participating in this production of A Christmas Carol. Is that right?
34 actors and one director.
And many of them, I suspect the vast majority of them, who knew and appreciated Phil Yeager.
Every single one of them, yeah.
Definitely.
Very good. Clara Tappa, I know that you knew Phil especially well. Tell us a little bit about the circumstances under which you knew him and whatever you want our listeners to know about him.
Well, I met Phil through the theater many years ago. I was in high school when we met. An ad pair. Phil was more than 20 years my senior, but we clicked right away, and we've been dear friends ever since. Phil was Uncle Phil to my children and my grandchildren. We were just really close. He was really family to me. And, you know, you caught me off guard, Greg, at the start of this interview when you said the late Phil Yeager. That's the first time I've heard that. And I am still, as many of us are, in shock that Phil's gone. Just earlier this year, we were doing an interview with you for a production, Death of a Streetcar Named Virginia Woolf. Phil and I were in your studio. And now to think that we're doing this in his memory is just, it's shocking. Phil went pretty quickly. He had been successfully fighting off leukemia for many years. And this year it just came back with a vengeance, transitioned into a very aggressive form of cancer. And he went rather quickly. It was, he passed on October 26th. I was lucky enough to still be able to visit him once a day. He could get one visitor a day. So another friend and I were able to trade off and visit him pretty regularly. But of course he passed alone because it was outside visiting hours, and with COVID restrictions, that was also very hard to take. But ironically, Phil had a premonition that this year would be his last, and that show in March would be his last, and which was very interesting because he really wasn't, he didn't become quite ill until summertime. Doing this in his memory, one of his favorite roles, with all of these actors and actresses that worked with Phil, knew him, appreciated him, is really phenomenal. I have a very small role in the show, but just being able to see all of the people, several of whom are in other states, but some folks that we, Phil and I, had a long history of performing with. It's quite a unique experience. It takes a little bit of the blow off of encountering these first holidays without Phil. Phil spent holidays with my family. I was so thankful when Alex approached me, let me know what he was planning, and to hold it in Phil's memory.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with four people very closely involved in a production of A Christmas Carol that is going to be shared with the public in performances December 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. So next week, virtual performances in which you can experience this marvelous Christmas classic. And this production is being presented in memory of Phil Yeager, well known to the theater community here in southeastern Wisconsin. And a little bit later, we'll have Clara tell us about a scholarship that is being created in Phil Yeager's memory. J.R. Trimark, I wonder if you could say a word about this particular production and how it took shape, and maybe a little bit about the special challenges that are involved in directing productions that exist in this way and are shared with the public in this way versus a standard production in the way that we normally think of standard theater. Just what kind of a challenge does this represent to you as director?
Well, when I was notified that Phil had passed, it was very hard. Reached out to Jay, talked to him, reached out to Alex. I called Clara. It was a shock. And so after about a day or so, Alex reached out and goes, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you about something." And he says, "What do you think about doing Christmas Carol in a tribute to Phil?" I said, "Cool, I'm in." And he says, "I want you to direct it." And I went, "Oh, okay. How many people do you think are going to show up?" He goes, "I don't know." So we contacted 5 different theater companies and a radio drama group, RG Productions, Racine Theatre Guild, Lakeside, Fleeing Artist, and PM&L, and said, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this. We just like to know if you're interested in what your involvement would like to be. Do you have a lot of time? Does it matter to you the part?" Keeping in mind, we have the pandemic, the challenges, holidays. I mean, this is a big commitment. We ended up getting 39 responses back. And I remember once we tallied the numbers up, I called Alex. I went, "Okay, 39 people, 5 states, you know, Florida, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, North Carolina." And I remember his first response is, "Isn't this a great problem to have?" And of course, I'm just at that point somewhat overwhelmed just because of the sheer magnitude. And then started planning all these nuances, diving in and watching lots of videos on what works and doesn't work in Zoom, tapping into Alex's expertise, mapping out costumes, props, lighting, makeup, how often each of the characters are in the show, how many acts, so we can gauge their involvement. That coupled with Zoom and everybody's Wi-Fi, we had to figure out how are we going to hand props off, get costumes, character interaction, special effects. You know, some of the super spooky scenes, we want to try to convey that. And what was remarkable is we had marked up the script. I gave it to Alex to approve because it had been written for 8 people to do 50 parts. And I converted it to 34, 35. And I wanted to get his input because he spent so much time doing the script and it was so well done. I wanted to make sure I didn't detract too much from it. We shared it out with everybody and I'm looking through this going, this is going to be very interesting. All the actors that participated went over the top. Example, Scrooge, you need to be sad. Jay just piled on. I could tell you actor after actor that did that through their character development, through adding their own props, adding their own special effects. And when you're working with such a talented group, it was a joy. So that actually, in a way, made it a lot easier because trying to direct 34 people, as you can imagine, on Zoom and rehearsing on Zoom and a final production on Zoom is challenging because you lose that human interaction. Many times we talked, "Hey, you know, break a leg, have fun. This is for Phil." Reminisced, and we got back into it. But just hearing you ask Claire those questions, it started to, it brought back the memories. So I'm very happy we're doing it, but it's also very somber.
Sure. Yeah, a strange, bittersweet experience, I'm sure. I can understand that perfectly. How many rehearsals are we talking about? And how different did this feel from more standard rehearsals where everybody's in the room together?
Well, the rehearsals were a challenge because we wanted to be able to give the blocking the first night, run through it several times, tighten it up the second night, and then record the third night. And some of the acts were able to do that, like act one. Other acts, we would rehearse once, do the blocking, and the next day record. Act four and act one, very similar in nature. It took a little bit more rehearsing. And it has to do with turning your screen on and off. I mean, that was a big point, and the delay and overlapping lines and that delay. Alex, would you add anything to that?
I'd say we've got one more rehearsal, and that will be rehearsal number 12. So in very short a time, we've rehearsed 12 times from first read through to our final recording day. And each night, everyone not only gets better and better, more and more succinct, but it really shows just how not only dedicated to their craft they are, but their love of the man that just propels them to give 150% every single night.
So Jared Trimark, when you say blocking in this kind of format, what does blocking mean? Because of course, in a standard theatrical production, there's an entrance over here and an entrance over there and a stage you're walking back and forth on. You're obviously not using the term blocking in that standard sense of the word.
Yeah, that's a great question. It has to do with when they turn their screens on and off, where are they? Mm-hmm. And when the screen is on, there's a lot you can do and pretend you're hiding from someone, you're reaching out to interact with somebody, you're passing a sack. You know, the thief Dilber and Josie, and they passed the sack, and we had multiple sacks. So character A would reach out and hand it over to the screen. Character B would grab it, and it looks like they just handed it to one another. Interactions between the characters, because what we didn't want to do is have them look left, right, up, down. We instructed them, the person that you're interacting with is your camera. And I think it worked very, very well.
Fascinating. Let's bring in Jay Rattle, who is our Scrooge. And of course, many people listening to this will know Jay Rattle for any number of different theatrical exploits that he's been a part of. First of all, Jay, is this your first time undertaking the role of Scrooge?
No, it's not. I actually played it at Lakeside many years ago. I have quite a history. I've done Christmas Carol probably five or six times with Lakeside. I've played Fezziwig and Partygoers and in different versions of the show. I was also in the show last year with Alex and JR as assistant director to two talented people from Carthage College, as a matter of fact, as directors. The Binghams, I believe is their name. And so this is not my first rodeo with good old Scrooge.
Tell us what it's like to undertake the role under these circumstances, given the gentleman to whom this whole production is dedicated. And what kind of difference has that made for you as you undertake it this time around?
Well, it's certainly, as you say, is different because you don't have that personal interaction with the other characters when you're on stage. You're playing basically, you know, to a screen that sort of has everybody looking back at you. And it just seems to be, it's working because the people have made it work. And we've made ourselves believe that we're actually interacting with all these other characters. And Scrooge himself, of course, goes through many, you know, goes through a huge transformation by the end of the show. You know, he is, as we all know, he's this bah humbug creep that gets his butt kicked by the three ghosts.
So do you have specific recollections of Phil Yeager in this role?
I think, well, I actually directed Phil in a version of Christmas Carol back in 1997.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. I have made sure that I tried to do Phil's performance justice, that what he did, because he played it so often. He also played Scrooge in one of those shows like, I can't think of the name of the show, but it was Tiny Tim, and it was a Christmas Carol, but it was a spoof of Christmas Carol and a bunch of, and Oliver, I think is what it was. Mm-hmm. But it's just being able to perform the role again has always been my dream. I actually tried out last year and I only tried out for Scrooge, but then due to circumstances, I took on all these other roles of Christmas Present and the little boy at the end and Marley and So it was, it's been an interesting, you know, proposition.
Yeah. So you have quite a powerful connection with this work yourself over the course of many, many years.
Yes, I do.
Clara Tappa, can you tell us why Christmas Carol was so special to Phil Yeager? Do you remember him ever saying what it was he loved so much about this work?
Well, he appreciated the classics, certainly the quality of this show, just, you know, Dickens' creation is just, it's a fantastic, sentimental, dramatic, lovely piece of work. And playing Scrooge gave him an opportunity to really play a very deep role, I think. And that's anytime he could really show his acting chops, but also have that heart, the message in it is just so wonderful. I think was really important to Phil. And a classic that is so widely appreciated. You know, a lot of times the classic plays have a limited appeal for audiences, but Christmas Carol certainly has a very wide appeal.
For sure. Alex Michalski, tell us more about the specific script that is used for this. What kind of an adaptation are we talking about?
Sure. Originally, when I conceived of this script, I was thinking in terms of functionality as well as theatricality. And to that end, we created a storyteller version of theater where, in addition to actors playing characters, interacting with each other, you know, Scrooge and Marley, etc., we would have the actors speak with the audience and engage directly with the audience. It let us include many passages that Dickens wrote that usually aren't included in adaptations just because it's third person. Why would an actor or character speak in the third person? The version also only had 8 actors to really emphasize the theatricality. 1 Scrooge and then 7 people playing, I want to say like 45 other characters and narrators, something like that. This version we modified, JR and I, mainly JR, modified it about 2 weeks or so before our first read-through to try to bring in as many, 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 many of Phil's theater family as possible. So it's the same words. Overall, it's the same beat. We've streamlined it a little bit because sitting and watching a screen can be a little bit of a draining experience, as we've all encountered the past 9 months. So this version runs at 90 minutes, including intermission.
Right. J.R. Trimark, explain the matter of costumes and props, and whether or not each of your individual actors was, in a sense, left to their own devices to come up with whatever might be needed or effective.
So props, we picked specific ones that everybody associates with Christmas Carol. The crutch, for example, is one of them. And we reached out to different theater groups of the 5 I mentioned and obtained a good number of the props and ran them out there. There were some that the actors brought. We kind of gave a description. They had something in their house. they went and found it at a dollar store. Very similar with their costumes. There were specific costumes we wanted to use. Excuse me. But for the narrators, we gave a very generic costume, more of just off-white. But then for the remaining characters that are in the show, we wanted them to look like Scrooge, wanted them to look like Belinda, wanted them to look like the ghosts. We gave some pieces, described what we were looking for, and this is where it's great to work with such a talented cast. They filled in the rest. And there were many times we'd get pictures or we'd start the rehearsal out, what do you think? And it'd be a little costume modeling, prop modeling, and then we'd give our opinions, and then the next day it would be fixed, and we were ready to record. So I attribute this a lot to the actors contributing all the things they did, because without them doing that, just getting all those costume and props out to that number of people in the time frame would have been very difficult in 5 states.
Yeah, it was almost like the olden days of Hollywood, of like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney. Hey, you have a barn? Yeah, I have a barn. You have all those outfits? Yeah, we have those outfits. Let's put on a show. And everybody really came together and made it happen.
So, Jay Rattle, give us your perspective on what it was like to be in this virtual production versus all of the productions before this that have been on a standard stage.
Well, as for me, my biggest problem is just having a fear of Zoom and all the technical things that come along with doing a production like this. But even today, I still go, okay, we can get together after rehearsal here and go out for a drink or something. And it's like, well, if we want to go to South Carolina and get a drink or Florida and get a drink, sure, why not? But it's been a real unique experience. Like I said earlier, you know, you expect to interact with the other characters, but in a sense, you're interacting with the screen, and you are interacting, but on less personal of a level, I guess, is you know, what's kind of the final word on that. You know, you take and the short rehearsal period too has been rather unique, you know, especially as Scrooge, because it's a pretty demanding role, you know, throughout the entire show, especially coming up to Act Four, because other than the other characters, I mean, this is Scrooge's redemption, and of course, it's mostly him in Act Four with all the lines, with all the crying and everything. Last night, I actually had tears in my eyes during the Cratchit scene with Tiny Tim. I think that's partly why I might have missed one of my lines, because the tears were watering my eyes and I couldn't see my script.
That, as problems go, is a nice problem to have. And
it is.
Of course, what a moving experience I'm sure this is for all of you. So Alex Metalski, as production manager, what primarily has been your role in the shaping of this, and especially now in the final stages of preparation for this before it is shared with the public?
I would say mainly that of a shepherd, shepherding the actors, making sure everyone signs in on time, ready to go, trying to make sure we keep the production moving as efficiently as possible, given the time constraints of only essentially 3 weeks of rehearsal, coordinating with our editor, coordinating with advertising, trying to get the word out there, and making sure we all have fun. It is called a play. We want to make sure that there are so many magical moments in the play. There are so many fantastical moments and funny elements. Dickens is a funny writer, a wonderful, brilliant satirist. There's a lot of deep darkness and scariness, but there is a lot of joy as well. So trying to balance the emotions and the logistical.
Right. As we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, everyone is hearing this on Friday. At this point in time, is any of this performance yet recorded? Are you in the final stages of that?
We're in the very final stages. We've finished recording Acts 1, 2, and 3. So the Jacob Marley, the Ghost of the Past, and the Ghost of the Present. We are going to record the future tonight, which is a fun thing to say. Record the ending. And then this weekend, our editor will be putting on all the bells and whistles, the sound effects, the final touches, snipping out any Zoom lag or buzz sounds that we have grown accustomed to the past 9 months. And we'll be releasing the final product on Tuesday.
Right. And so there are, in a sense, three performances, December 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And while the performance of the play itself is something pre-recorded, you were saying that there will be a live element to each of those performances.
Certainly. JR and I will be live speaking over Zoom and over Facebook stream to our adoring public, to the audience who tunes in, before presenting Christmas Carol. We'll also be speaking at intermission and after the show. The main purpose of this, theater is live. You know, I love movies, I love television, but the main component of theater is it being live and present. So Zoom only presents a half second delay. So having that live element to me is very, very important.
Very good. In a second, we'll let you tell people how they can access these performances. Claire Tappa, tell us about the scholarship that is being created in Phil Yeager's memory.
Sure. When Phil passed, so many people reached out and said, you know, what can we do? With COVID, we're delaying any kind of memorial service for Phil because you know, he did his best to respect the dangers of COVID and to be very careful. And I think he would expect that of us now. So that is delayed. But we thought of a way, you know, people want to give, they want to remember him. And he was very well educated actor. He appreciated education. He enjoyed mentoring young actors and actresses over his lifetime, and just thought this would be a really great way to memorialize his life and his dedication to theater.
Fantastic. So, Alex Matowski, if people want to experience this production of A Christmas Carol for themselves, how do they do that?
The best way would be to either visit our Facebook page, Fleeing Artists Theater, or visit our website, www.fleeingartists.org. We will be presenting the show over Zoom. So on our Facebook page and in our Facebook events, there's a link you can click on. It's free. You literally click the link and you can join in as if you have Zoom on your smart device, your phone, etc. Or you can just watch on our Facebook page. We will be streaming the show live on our Facebook page. You just have to click on it anytime from 15 minutes before 7 to the end, and you'll be able to tune in.
Fantastic. And
I should also mention, real quick, if I may, with the scholarship, we will be, it is a free show, and we understand times are tough, so no need to pay anything, but we will be soliciting donations for the scholarship during each of the shows, and the Fleeing Artists are committing $500 matching donations for the first 500 donated. So if you are able to donate and support this scholarship and really foster the next generation of theater artists, that would be wonderful. And we know times are tough, so if you can't, totally understand, but that's what we will be doing.
Very good. Very good. Alex Matowski, J.R. Trimark, Jay Rattle, Clara Tappa, all involved in this virtual production of A Christmas Carol in memory of their good friend, Phil Yeager. Thank you to all of you for being part of the morning show. Best wishes as you finish up what I know is a very special undertaking for all of you. And thank you for being part of today's morning show.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. To finish out the program today, we are connecting with three friends from the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin. James Schatzman, the artistic director, and Julia and Karel Suki. And we're talking about the next offering to the community from the Choral Arts Society on the fifth day of Christmas. And it will be offered up on the fifth day of Christmas, that is December 29th at 7 p.m. on the Choral Arts Society's YouTube channel. And here to talk about it will be James Schatzman and Julia and Karel Suki. We welcome all three of you back to the morning show.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Jim, it's been quite a year for you, 2020, with about a very serious illness earlier in the year. And you were telling me you're under the weather yet again now with just the plain old flu. So I have a feeling for a lot of different reasons you're looking forward to saying goodbye to 2020 and hello to 2021 and all of the hopes for a better year.
Yes, although I'm looking forward to our presentation at the end of the month. Very much looking forward to that.
Right. First things first. So let's talk about on the fifth day of Christmas. So tell us what is going into this, or maybe give us first of all a sense of the arc within it, within which it belongs, how this offering follows up on some previous offerings.
Well, we have been focusing on local composers this year, and that's been, I think, very exciting. It's certainly an important part of our mission, and we thought, you know, of all the things that are going to be coming out, you know, for Christmas, and that this would be something that would be unique again, and unique to us, you know. And so the arc of this really is that, you know, we are doing, it's a little bit of a modified Lessons and Carols. We're going to be presenting three compositions from local composers, and we're going to have some readings in between those compositions, as well as some interviews with the composers CA has commissioned to write these pieces for.
So a little bit of background information on each of them. Carlos Zucchi, you've been the person most responsible for the hands-on construction of this video, and you were telling me it's still cooking in the kitchen, but I'm guessing nearing completion. Tell us what is involved on a technical level in putting all of this together.
I hope that I will not burn the cooking. So this will be in three parts. Three composers will be addressed, and each composer will have their thoughts presented with the piece together. Fortunately, with Christian and your piece, we were able to have video recording of it while it was presented with Carol Burnett piece. We don't have that, so there will be one montage of photography and the piece itself, the audio recording. And of course, as I said, each of them will have time to present the piece. And what is the most important, say some interesting inner thoughts, which you usually don't know about or don't hear.
So the background between telling the story of how these sprang into being. It's a really, really lovely idea. And Julia, do I understand that in addition to the three pieces and the introduction from the composers, that some readings are also part of the mix here?
Yes, we're still kind of working on that, but that's the idea, is to sort of use those to knit the whole thing together.
Jim Schatzman, tell us about these three pieces and what people should be listening for.
Well, these pieces are all very tightly tied. Three pieces all have to do with the Christmas story. And Carol Burnett's piece was the first one that in this set that we commissioned. She's a composer from Minneapolis and was a house arranger and composer for the Dale Warland Chorus for many years. Very gifted composer. She wrote a wonderful piece called Welcome All Wonders on two poems by that she drew from, one by Richard Crashaw and the other by Gerard Manley Hopkins, two very famous English poets and clerics. It's the stunning piece written for children's choir, chorus, and SATB chorus and oboe. And so it's a wonderful sonic experience. The children come in and start this piece off, and the peals from the oboe to get us all started. And I think the other thing that's really interesting about all three of these pieces is that they all have a very unique rhythmic energy. These are not your basic 4-4 straightforward, interesting kind of pieces. There's a lot of rhythmic interest in them. And so in Carol's piece, you're gonna hear that energy and that drive, as well as the kind of more pastoral sections where the children's choir sings. And so that is, I'm looking forward to hearing this again. It's been a while since we've done it. The other piece, There Is No Rose, is a famous early English text. It actually can be found in a 1400s book called The Trinity Roll. There's a book of English poetry and music from the 1400s that has some of the first polyphonic English music ever written. And a lot of these poems are quite famous, and many of them, several of them were used by Benjamin Britten in Ceremony of Carols. So this is a lovely, lovely poem. And again, Christian Jesse is a young composer who just finished up with his master's degree at SMU. He lives here in southeastern Wisconsin and has just recently moved back. And so we did the Wisconsin premiere of the piece, and I'm real excited to be working with Christian on some future projects with us as well. He's a gifted young composer, and we're real lucky to have him here in our area. And the third piece on that is a piece that we commissioned you to write for us called Shepherd's Gloria. One of the most interesting rhythmic pieces I think we've ever had written for us. It's just the ebb and flow of the rhythmic energy in this piece for me really grabs me. And I know our audiences have really, really enjoyed this. And actually a quite nice original text. I'm very excited for our audience to hear this again.
I was just looking on your cheat sheet. I did not realize it was all the way back to 2005 that you commissioned that. I did not realize that piece was that old, but I'm looking forward as well to seeing it and nestled in with these other fine works. Julia Suki, I know that you have something that you want to tell us about that is an enhancement to this experience of watching on the fifth day of Christmas. You're calling it Dinner and a Show. Explain this really fun tie-in.
Well, everything goes better with food. So we're fortunate that Sebastian's restaurant is doing a special dinner curbside pickup for this event. And the information for what the menu is and how to order and so on is on our website, choralartsonline.org. But basically it's three course dinner, first course, entree and dessert, and $40 a person. And you just have to call Sebastian's ahead of time, order it, and then you can pick it up on the day of the concert between 4 and 7 p.m.
Uh-huh. And then sit down and enjoy it. Yes. So this is something that people should be sitting in front of their computer screens on December 29th at 7 p.m. I mean, like, that is when this actually launches. Once it launches, are people able to still see it after the fact?
Yes, it'll be up on YouTube indefinitely. So.
And remind me, how many of these video offerings has the Choral Arts Society already shared with the community?
Well, this is our second major one. We have some little shorts, but this is our second major project.
Yeah. And are you anticipating there being others like this in 2021?
Well, it's looking that way, especially because it's going to be a while with vaccine distribution and so until we can go back to things as usual. So this is one way we can stay active and in touch with the community, participate.
Speaking of that, remind our listeners about some of the ways in which the Choral Arts Society is maintaining connection with one another, even in this time where rehearsing together in a room is thought not advisable.
Well, we have lots of emails. I send out a weekly update email for all the chorus members and the board. Often I get emails back from people just checking in and so on. So, you know, we have a little dialogue going. We do occasional Google Meet hangouts, kind of like Zoom. The nice thing about our Google Meet is that people can phone in. So you don't need to have a computer to do it. And we do that on occasion. We post videos or tag videos on YouTube that are good for singers to keep up their voices, vocal exercises, warm-ups, things like that. Encourage people to practice, or at least sing in the shower.
All of that is important. Very, very good. And I know that you've been working very, very hard to keep some money flowing in, and it sounds like thanks to some grants, the pulse is still strong for the Choral Arts Society.
Yes, yes. We're fortunate to benefit from CARES Act funding and State of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Arts Board funding, and so on, private donors.
Very good.
Yeah, and individual funders have also been very generous. The Racine Community Foundation, as an organization, has continued to support us, even though we're not actually producing concerts at this time. And some of our biggest patrons have also really gone the extra mile to make sure that we're sustainable until we can get back to revenue generating events. Mm.
So speaking of that, Jim, as you look to 2021, what kind of plans are you at least tentatively putting in place?
Well, we have some contingency programming out there, and we're looking at two possible programs for 2021. The program that we just were getting ready to do, matter of fact, you were accompanying us on that program, The Spirit Sings. We're going to be hoping to present that program when we come back together. And then we're also in building for a program called Better Together, where we are going to be singing with local African American churches and doing a program of music of Glenn Burley and some other composers that we know, to really talk about unity and what it means to be together and to strive for common goals. And so that program is being built, and the partners are being brought in. And so in an ideal world, I don't know that it's looking that way right now. We had said that those programs would have happened in March and in May of 2021, probably looking more likely that they may happen in May and July of 2021. So it's fluid, certainly.
Right.
But the planning is there.
Right. Well, and just the thought of being able to hope for something like that is a great advance over just a few months ago, when it just seemed like we had no idea when such a thing would be possible again. And now in the relatively near future, we can hope that such public concerts indeed are possible. In the meantime, let's remind people once again about what they can enjoy with this next video offering from the Choral Arts Society. Julia, remind them of when this is being shared and how they can experience it.
Well, the best way to find information is on our website, choralartsonline.org. It will be on Tuesday, December 29th, the fifth day of Christmas, at around 7 p.m. Sometimes YouTube doesn't let you pick an exact time, so it'll be either 7 or 7:15. Mm. We'll post the updates and let people know.
Is there something magic about the fifth day of Christmas, or was that just because it gave you the right amount of time to get something this intricate put together?
Well, we were looking online to try to not compete with other groups, and we are actually blessed with a lot of online pre-Christmas events and Christmas events, and it looked like there was kind of a space between Christmas and New Year's that needed filling, so we decided to fill it.
Fantastic. And Caro, you can assure us that this will be all finished by the time December 29th rolls around. Your masterful knob turning and so on will be done by then?
Pressure is on. I hope so, and let's pray for it.
It'll be done.
Yes. If Julia has anything to say about it, it will be done. So Julia and Karel Suki and James Schatzman, all with the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, I thank you for your time and wish you happy holidays.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from the University of Wisconsin Parkside, offering a degree in health information management technology for today's modern medical field. More information is available online at uwp.edu.